This is Poured Over, a show about stories presented by the booksellers of Barnes & Noble.
I'm Jenna Siri, a bookseller and associate producer of Poured Over, and today I am so excited to be talking to Shannon Chakraborty about her book, The Adventures of Amina al-Sarafi, which is about to come out in paperback. If you haven't already read it in the hardcover, I can't wait for you to get your hands on this incredible book. I know so many of you out there have read the Devabad trilogy, the series, which is one of my favorites. It completely opened new doors in fantasy for me. It got me back into fantasy in so many ways because the characters are incredible. The world building is insane. And Amina's journey is no different. So, Shannon, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I think the only place to start when talking about this book is to talk about Amina herself, because she is such a special character. I think especially in fantasy, we see a lot of the same types of people come through. There's a lot of archetypes in what we can expect, I think, especially for women. And Amina sort of subverts a lot of that. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about her and how you came to her story.
I will. A lot of the subversion was completely intentional. I love fantasy fiction, but I mean, it's almost a tired hat to say a lot of the characters are young. And that's not anything new. I think people want to be like, oh, it's contemporary influences. It's not. Humans have been telling coming-of-age stories about the youth since we have been telling stories. But after I finished the Devabad trilogy, one, I wanted something fun and refreshing. And I also just wanted a character who felt more like me. Not that I'm, you know, a murderous pirate, but I wanted an older character. I wanted to write about motherhood. And I wanted to write about that sort of feeling when you're kind of like, is my story written? You know, I feel like I'm still finding out who I am. That can't be done because I'm no longer 18 years old. And I wanted to have that. I wanted to have what it feels like to have one more adventure when you're worried maybe there's not going to be that many more adventures. And when those adventures are kind of, you know, you're tired, you're achy, you have 1,000 responsibilities at home. So I wanted to really get into that. So that was very, very, I mean, a lot of us like, there's a reason one last adventure is a trope. And I wanted to dive in. I wanted to dive in with all of her friends also being at that point in age and they're all kind of riffing on each other. But it was also very important for me to write a character who was a mother, who we'd never really see in fantasy fiction and a lot of fiction. It's always like, if it's a fantasy, you know, a parent has died, usually the mother, because they're typically the one who would, you know, stop that. No, you're not going on an adventure. Sorry, come back here. Eat your vegetables and do your homework. So I wanted to really explore the idea of motherhood and that it can be hard, but it can also be wonderful. You know, we often see a lot of black and gray of women can't have it all, or they can have it all and has to be Instagram perfect. And I wanted to kind of explore the idea that yes, she's made some choices. She loves being a mother, but she has lost out on some of the things she wanted to be doing and is very much trying to find that balance, but also the ways in which motherhood changes you. I mean, we see throughout the book, when she's in a sticky situation, she is goading herself in a way. You have to survive. You have to go home. You have a kid. You know, like that really, that changes you. And I wanted to have that aspect in there. But it was just a joy to write, to really kind of get into that perspective. I had so many readers who are parents right back and they were like, thank you so much. You know, I wanted to read something that felt like escapism, but for someone like me.
I think from the moment we start to hear Amina's voice, and she's just so funny and real and is different than a lot of the characters that I'm used to coming to in fantasy that are very, like, so sure of themselves. And she is in so many ways sure of herself, but yet she has this vulnerability because she has these connections and she can recognize, oh, I've made myself vulnerable in so many ways by having a child and caring for, you know, her family, and to watch her go on that sort of path of like balancing her two worlds is so fun and something I don't think we get to see very often.
Well, thank you. I mean, I love developing her voice. I knew from the beginning I wanted her narrative voice to feel very unique and very powerful, kind of take over the story in a way, but also feel different. I very much wanted this book to be firmly rooted in history. And trying to find a balance between how a person in the 12th century might have spoken and might have thought about their world, about themselves, and filter that both through sort of a working class, essentially criminal overlay. I mean, it's interesting. I heard a lot of like people, oh, why did you choose certain vocabulary? And often explain the language she speaks is gone at this point. Not only is the idea of, you know, 12th century Arabic, formal Arabic, is you can be maintained, but she would have spoken a language that would have been combined so many different tongues in the era. And when you do go back and look at medieval sources, I think we have an idea that this period is just stayed. No one ever cursed. No one ever swore. They didn't have opinions about being a woman. They didn't have an opinion about being a working class. That is not true. And you can go back and see it in their own world. Many of these sources are funny. They're profane. They say things and think things that are more scandalous and lewd than I would ever see in my life, let alone my book. So I did want to capture that aspect of that history, that it could be funny and profane and feel not modern, but familiar. The past is a different world, but we're all still very familiar as humans.
I think that was a very welcome and like reassuring thing to read as you're going through that, like, oh yeah, this is not a character that feels out of place in her time. Because I do think sometimes when, especially again, unfortunately for female characters, when they are sort of written, it can feel almost like anachronistic that, oh, there's certainly no way that could have happened. But first of all, we're in fantasy, so we get a little bit more leeway anyway. But I don't think Amina ever feels false or like a caricature of who she would be, especially when she's with all these other people with huge personalities. It all blends together very well.
And I think that's an important part. I often encourage people who write fantasy and write historical fiction to think about. There is an aspect, I believe, sometimes of responsibility, because you are essentially setting what is the lay perception of the past. And no, you're not a historian, you don't have to be completely accurate. But if you're writing about certain subjects, to be honest, I feel this when I'm writing about Muslim women, I want to be able to stand there and say, no, you know, women have always lived full lives. No, I'm not even going to pretend like, oh, the past was so perfect. It wasn't. I think about the rates of disease and child mortality, and that alone would have just completely, it would have been a completely different world to us. But women were making lives for themselves. They've always made lives for themselves. You know, I would be looking through books and it would be talking about, like, you know, widows and divorcees and singles and how they wouldn't go back for a man. There was a case even just in the 12th century where this very high to-do lady divorces her husband and marries a porter, you know, sort of somebody who was carrying her baggage when she went on a Red Sea voyage. And, you know, all the people at the time were like, oh, I bet it was just, you know, so she could sleep with him. Like, you know, this is something women have always had, this aspect. And I think we should have that in our stories. We can tell stories about the past and about, you know, womanhood that doesn't make it sound like, oh, everything was so rosy. But I think we should also respect the fact that we've always made lives for ourselves. And it doesn't have to be this grim, terrible thing all the time.
And Amina's life is so full. She has her family. She has this sense of purpose from her past with her job. Well, job, I guess we could say, lifestyle, being a pirate. Yeah. But she also has faith and she has care for others and she has this sense of wonder for the world. And no part of anything she's doing feels one-sided. There's so much to her.
Yes. And that's what I wanted. I wanted her life to feel very full. That's sort of, I think, you know, people joke, you talk to somebody when they're 25, they're like, oh, I don't want to be 40. It's going to, you know, like, I'm going to be old, I'm going to be decrepit. Like, but your life just gets so much fuller as you make new friendships, as you fall in love, as you fall out of love, as you have children, as your family and friends grow and increase. It adds a richness to your life as you get older.
And her family is so great because it's not just her blood family, her daughter, her mother, and her brother, but she has a found family, as in a sense, of these people that are on the ship with her. And they are some of the best, like, most fun, especially, like...
And that was so much fun to do, because I think for a lot of found families in literature, we see them find each other. We see them come together. I wanted to look at what that looks like. They've already come together. They've had 15, 20 years of sniping at each other and standing up for each other. Now they've fallen apart and they're coming back together. And I would assume, obviously, see influences of the Ocean's 11, 12, 13 movies in this. And I remember, just because you were speaking about Majid, there's a character, I think it's Ocean's 13. It's the gender swapped one where they go to get one of their thieves back and she's living this cookie cutter perfect suburban life. And I just remember thinking that was what I wanted the Magic to be, the like, you know, the male 12th century version of that, where he's just like, no, not a criminal, never was a criminal, have everything perfect. And then, you know, of course, simmering on this under the surface, it's all like his previous activity. But I wanted to, I think sometimes when you identify tropes, it can be very fun to twist them in different ways.
Yes. It's Ocean's 8 and it's Sarah Paulson's character. I know it so well. Well, okay. I was getting a lot of Ocean's vibes and also some Fast and Furious vibes with the like one more job trope, which I think is so funny to like put through here, to be like, just one more time. We have to get the family back together one more time. And I think everybody knows it's never one more time, but I have to also talk about my favorite character, Raksh, who is maybe not supposed to be people's favorite character, but I think just the way that he sort of sweeps in and changes the entire trajectory of the story is so incredible. And it just made my reading experience the whole time. You know, we get these sort of like, who is this going to be? And then when we find out, it's like, oh, perfect.
Well, first of all, I had joy writing him because here, you know, I'm writing about all these characters. They're trying to atone for the past. You know, Amina is trying to be a better Muslim. They're trying to be better parents, friends. And then you show up, not a demon, just like saunter in, absolutely no moral compass. No, and is not supposed to have a moral compass. He's very much like, I'm not human. I am different than you. Why would I be constrained by these ideas? So he was a joy to write, just this truly like alien, utterly selfish character. And I also thought I think again, in fantasy, sometimes we see a trope often of dark brooding, you know, love interest who's, you know, morally gray and all this nonsense. And I wanted to also do a flip of that. What if he wasn't morally gray? What if just his main attraction was the fact that he was very sexy? She made some mistakes. And, you know, like it's the ex who blows up your life. And I really wanted to play with that idea of both very unexpected of, you know, what that kind of love interest, I even use in quotation because I don't think he's a love interest, what that could look like. And just to add some humor of just being something that he's just completely alien to the human experience in a like a humorous foil type of way.
And he is so funny. And just the interactions of him living his own life completely separately and just not really understanding how the human world works and how he plays a role in it. And yet he is so immersed in it and cannot seem to get himself out of it is so much fun. And I think the balance between the adventure and the humor really hits in that spot where it's like, this book would, I think, could be very easy to go one way or the other. This kind of story of like so much action and it's just so fast paced that you sort of lose the humanity in the characters, or it falls too much into the humor and maybe isn't as propulsive, but you find a way to go right down the middle with those things.
Well, thank you.
And it makes it very fun to read because I think there are not enough books about pirates. There are some great books about pirates. There are some great books about female pirates. Like I think of Deep as the Sky, Red as the Sea, Rita Chang Epic's book from a few years ago was an incredibly fun, a similar sort of story of motherhood on the high seas in certain ways. But this is super fun to get to go to pirates. So I wonder how you picked that sort of mood for us to go down.
The actual core of this book has been in my head for years. Of the idea of this mother who used to be a pirate in this particular setting for a lot of reasons. One, my original academic interest was in the medieval Indian Ocean world. I love it. I think it's completely fascinating. I could talk 3 hours about why. I won't do that to you and your listeners, but I knew I wanted to set something in that. And I began originally kind of toying with this book when I was querying for an agent for the Devabad trilogy, because I was having no luck, because strangely enough, in 2015, no one really wanted to buy a doorstopper with all these like foreign words. Guess that went away just fine. But I started working on a new book and I kind of just would toy over it on the years. And then at the point where I think I was in between 2 and 3 of the Devabad trilogy, I had Kingdom of Copper was coming out and they asked if I had another project. And I did. I said, I have what I view as Sinbad the Sailor meets Ocean's 11. And they were like, okay, here, please just go with that. You don't even need to hand in the summary. Just go with that. And so I kind of always knew I wanted it to be that setting. And I love, I mean, I won't, again, getting into the reasons I love this period in time, but there are so many travelogues. And we hear, you know, Ibn Battuta is a famous one, but there's a lot of other similar ones. And we have these scholars and these travelers, and they go throughout the medieval world, largely the Islamic world. It hangs together in a way that you could use your education, you know, that you got in, say, Morocco, to go to all the way to China and continue to work in Islamic courts. But it's great because it offers a snapshot of life, but they're often very judgy of the locals, of the people who, you know, carry out their journey, the sailors, the captains, the porters. So I kind of wanted to tell a book about that story of the people who were living on those fringes. A lot of the like actual sources in the medieval world, they're very city-based and they're very funny because of that. They talk about guilds of criminals, of highwaymen, of assassins, of how you can fake this person out and fake this person out. And so there's just such richness in there. I knew I wanted to play in that world and kind of bring a lot of that to a more popular perception. So I always knew it was going to be that. It was going to be pirates because pirates are fun. I mean, pirates are not in real life fun. Although I think there is, and this was an idea I wanted to play with, is one person's pirate is another person's hero. And I think in this particular time and frame, they were often, rather than sort of like our perception of like the 17th century Pirates of the Caribbean, in the Indian Ocean in this period, they are often more the go-between people who maybe help you go through customs a little faster, maybe steal back your shipment of horses that was stolen from someone else. So it's kind of like, you know, they grease the wheels in a way. And I thought that was just a very entertaining, collection of people to look into. So I always knew it was going to be pirates. Guess they're fun.
And we are all so glad it's pirates. And you say you don't want to talk about your research too much, but I can't wait to talk about your research because your worlds that you build, both in this book and in the Devaban trilogy, are so incredibly rich and they are so deep. There's so much there. And it never feels like an information overload or like I feel like I have to, that I'm behind somehow. But both books sent me on journeys to Google, which is one of my favorite things in a fantasy mm-hmm. book. I want to be Googling things because I love going down rabbit holes when I read. So I'd love to hear about your research process for this book because you do include a lot of like suggested reading materials and stuff in the back, which again, I love. So I'd love to hear about it.
Well, thank you. I kind of like didn't quite ask for permission. It's like a 10-page addendum to the book of like all the different ways you can learn about this period, which is funny because sometimes a lot of the criticisms I see of the book is that it's not historically accurate. But you know what? It's interesting because Devabad was historically inspired. And for Amina, I always knew if I was setting it in this part of the world, in this part of the time, I felt like I had a duty to get it as historically accurate as possible. And I joked that I said that more than once, that everything was going to be historically accurate except for the plot. And ironically enough, I invented a demon who preys on people who have too much ambition, which could have been me on this project. Because of course, as we find out, the past is constantly changing. Our understanding of it is changing. It has to be interpreted through what is left to us. There's no way to avoid having your own particular political bias and all that. So my research process for this was, do I just like switch you to the other line? Again, I was starting from a place of knowledge with it, but I did want to build that back up. So I would kind of, you know, I would write and then research, write and then research. I always tell people, or if they're working with historical fiction or historical fantasy, don't spend hours researching a particular topic while you're drafting, because that scene will get cut. So, but the research process, it was in many ways great. I felt like I learned so much, and I also was humbled repeatedly, which was helpful. It turns out we don't know as much about, marine culture, mariner culture 800 years ago when many of these things fall apart and the seasons change. But, you know, I think there was even points I was like speaking with some of the scholars who were experts and they were just like, there is no more than that. Everything we know, I can't correct these details, but it was enjoyable to see the new scholarship, to have, you know, when I was an undergraduate read, okay, this is what they thought about the sailing period. And it was kind of like, oh, you know, Arab and Muslim sailors stopped going past India at this point because they just didn't need to. And then instead, you know, I see the scholarship has advanced 10 years. This is what the ships looked like. They were so much more advanced than we thought. The reason they stopped going there is because the world was essentially becoming more Islamicized and they didn't need to. And it was in a very different way. So I love doing the research. I found myself, like, especially on the ideas of magic and sexuality and gender, really challenged in a way that I knew a lot of readers were not necessarily going to believe me. Like, yeah, there have always been people who are queer. There have always been people who do not feel that the gender binary applies to them. And that's there. That's not, you know, a modern writer putting my politics in. It almost felt like after reading all these things, to not have that, that would have been the political move of to pretend that queer love didn't exist. That, you know, a character like Jamal wouldn't have felt, I don't feel like a woman. What does that mean? That is there. That is there. It is documented. And I really enjoyed the fact that I could have my own knowledge challenged and find new ways to incorporate that. Even on the idea of magic, I think we have a cleaner idea sometimes of the past of, oh, it's superstitious, or, oh, all of these things are forbidden and haram. But people were practicing them. People were believing in them. It was an integral part of life. And that's not for someone, for me, from 2024 to sit back and judge. It's for me to understand why their world looked like that. So I found it honestly a wonderful, challenging experience. It added easily another year to the writing of the book. But I mean, I have books here that are like 13th century con artist manuals and travelers talking about all the salacious details. And if you just ever really want to feel like how human we are, and you read these passages and it just brings back a humanity that I think relates in more a way than I had really even considered before, just throwing myself into this and just what life might have looked like if I can try to pull it together as much from the fragments we have.
I find that that's one of the things we all come to reading for, to literature, but especially to fantasy. It gives this space for us to explore that humanity and explore what all of that means. I wrote down that one of your, I believe your quote here from the author's note was completely historically accurate, except for the plot, which I love. But beyond that, there's just so much connection that we can find, especially there in, I think, the growing sort of trend almost of historical fantasy. We see that so much now, this sort of taking cultures that maybe have been underrepresented in many ways and showing them through these incredible new lights. It's really a delight to read.
Well, thank you. And I think, like, we can also learn more from that. It was interesting. Some of the feedback I got from, like, very Western readers was about how I showed Amina and her sexuality and, you know, but women weren't allowed to have rights back then. Whose women weren't allowed to have rights back then? Because I can tell you, in the Islamic world, women had property. They could get divorced. No, again, I'm not going to be like, oh, everything was perfect and there was no abuse of the system. But a character like her, who has her own property, her own agency in some ways, would not need to get married. She could get married if she wanted to lie with a man. But women did make very different lives for themselves. I was reading another fact-checking something for the next book, and it was at one point they were saying, I think it was like 40% of the female population of Jerusalem was single. Again, you know, women made lives for themselves. And I think we have to sometimes get out of the idea of what we think the past was, especially the medieval world. Everyone thinks it's just the feudal society. Everyone had the plague. And women were basically slaves. And you know what? There probably were places where that was true, but not everywhere in the world. There were places that had thriving cities, that had sophisticated cosmopolitan worlds. I mean, I remember kind of when I was putting this together, it took me back a second to realize that, you know, there were people who their job would have been a scribe and they would have gone to work and they would have come home. They might have been passing, you know, the alley of the booksellers, picked up a fantasy book or something to bring home and read and gone home and played with their kids and, you know, complained about their in-laws and that they were still living very similar lives to us in many aspects 800 years ago. And I think that's something we need to remember sometimes, you know, it's the whole thing about, like, you don't remember the past, you're doomed to repeat it. That goes in not just the bad aspects, but the very human lives people live.
And so much of what we hear in history is either from the most rich or perhaps the very lowest classes. But just like today, most people live somewhere in between. and they have lives that are much more similar to maybe some things we'd expect. And I think getting to hear those stories is what's so great, because it reminds us, like you said, people went to work, they came home, they had these lives, and maybe they weren't all that different. And maybe sometimes they were pirates and it was magical, but that we're really all not all that different from the past. And I think one of my other favorite things about the way that you sort of tell that story is through these sort of like interstitial framing legends that you have that are so fun. And I wonder how you kind of came to those and why you chose to include them. And also, the second time I listened to this, I did the audiobook, and the acting on those is so good and so funny. So I really recommend to anyone to check that out too.
Yeah, the audiobook takes it up just an entirely different level. The actors are incredible. They nail the personalities. And it's, again, I won't spoil things because I think it's, you should have that interplay. But they actually got at a very good aspect of this, was, which was, I wanted this story to feel like it was in conversation with and sort of confrontation with many of the accounts that I read to inspire it, that were like, how would those scholars have written about Amina and her crew? Like, what would they have said? They would have said, again, all of the terrible things that they say, and then have that then show the flip human side of that. And a couple of them, I think I marked in the text or afterwards, which ones are taken directly from sources. The one about the pirates of Socotra was, the one about the poison was. So I wanted to kind of have that play of like, this is how they would tell your story, and then this is how they lived it. You know, kind of add a human aspect to it. And also, I think, I don't want to spoil things, but we are seeing in the story the creation of one of those scholars who will go on to tell these tales. So I wanted to kind of give space for him to shape into the sort of scholarly storyteller he will end up becoming.
It adds in this element of, I say playfulness, but I don't mean that necessarily in like a fun, silly way at all the time, because there are a lot of serious moments in this book where, you know, there is drama, there is high action, there are moments where you don't know what's going to happen. People get hurt, people have crazy things. But yet the book, and this is going to be a bad boat pun, but there's a buoyancy to the writing that I think is very different from the Devabad trilogy, in the sense that it has a different pacing. And I wonder how that felt if you were writing it, and did it feel very different from writing the books that you'd already written?
Absolutely. And that was intentional. I love the Devabad trilogy. You know, that's launched my career, started it, but finished Empire of Gold. And I was just like, I need some light.
Yes.
Some happiness and some humor. And what if it wasn't a story about like the feeling like the end of the world? So it was completely that. I always knew I wanted to write a more fun, adventurous romp. And then I ended up writing this book during the pandemic, which, so it ended up really being like, okay, I need to just escape into this and just go with a very different vibe. And I felt like, and I think we're still seeing some of this even in like the romanticy and cozy fantasy genres. I think people do want a little bit more like energy and fun and you know, warmth from their books. Not all the time. I mean, I'm sure all the genres and grimdark will have its day back in the sun, but I do think there's an element now of a lot of people are going through hard times, and sometimes you want to enjoy a story. It doesn't mean it's not serious. It doesn't mean it doesn't touch on important topics, but there can be a lightness to it that is essentially entertainment.
I totally agree. I think that a lot of the fantasy that I'm seeing come through right now is it has this sort of passion, this lightness, this push that hasn't always been there. But just like everything, it goes in trends and waves, and we'll go back towards other things. But I do think we're in a great period of fantasy writing right now. There's so much incredible work coming out from so many voices that are bringing different and exciting mythologies and ideas. So I think Amina fits so well in that sort of things that are new, things that maybe 10, 15 years ago, I couldn't have quite pictured this book or seen where it would fit. But now there's so much, it seems like there's so much space for different kinds of stories, and we have to make progress continuously, and there'll always be more room. But I know right now there's some amazing things that are coming in fantasy.
Yes, it's a great time. I mean, it's a joke. Anybody who works in publishing knows, like, you'll just never read all the books that you want to, but there are just some fabulous, fabulous stories coming out.
And I know this is somebody's favorite question, some people's least favorite question, or is there anything that you've read recently that you love, or things that you were reading that inspired this book, or some of your favorite things you've ever read that shape you as an author? A couple book recs for us. The listeners would never be upset.
I will throw a couple. The one book I recommend all the time is The Pasha of Cuisine, which I feel like if you liked Amin al-Sarafi, this is very similar to that, but it's about a cook in the Ottoman court who essentially travels around the Islamic world to learn food magic to save the woman he loves. And like, it was one of those books I read. I was like, I feel like made, because I love to cook. I feel like this was made specifically for me. And I would recommend it everywhere I go. So that's one rec. Another one that I just read this year was God Killer by Hannah Connor and the sequel Sunbringer. I have a great affection for books that really wrestle with religion and faith in a fantasy setting. I think they're fascinating. I think religion and faith are something we don't often give enough credence to when we're writing. It's a huge element of human society, whether you like that or not. And this is one that just really just like wrangles with it in all the ways that I like. It's a brilliantly imagined secondary world where it just feels real. It doesn't feel like an info dump. It feels very real. It's a found family. If you like that aspect, the characters are all older. So that felt like catnip to me. Yes. So another couple that I would recommend, again, it's kind of shake up the idea of what people think about the past and be incredibly entertained, but Flying Snakes and Griffin Claws by Adrian Mayer, just a selection of the different historical inspiration behind crazy things from, you know, why did we think Midas's touch was gold to the Poison King Mithridates. It's just an incredibly entertaining book. And you can kind of pick it up and read, you know, sections at a time. It's very good.
Love that. I also love that you brought up sort of faith and fantasy and religion aspect, because I think so often either that is shied completely away from in a lot of contemporary fantasy, or it's these really elaborate created mythologies or religions. And yet so much in historical fantasy, that is a huge part of life historically for people. And the way that Amina wrestles with her faith, I think, is really beautiful. And the way that it really influences her life, I think it's something very special about this book that I didn't expect when I first started it. And then you do get into it very quickly and you're like, oh, this is something I haven't read before. And I really enjoyed that piece.
Well, thank you. And that was also very important to me because I want to see more Muslim characters and some writers across the board, but I want to see more stories about coming back to faith. And again, I'm not coming here to evangelize or anything to people, but I think there's an aspect, again, it's just another part of human perception of, you know, we see people break from things a lot, but to come back from it as a criminal, you know, as part of the idea of trying to be a better person, it felt like it was a very natural fit for that character. And that I wanted to see that exploration in a Muslim character to kind of really have how that would work, to talk about, not, you know, the compassionate and the merciful side of her faith that keeps her going.
And I think it shows a lot of her vulnerability and a lot of the things that are not holding her back, because I don't think it ever does, but they are influencing those decisions and they sort of help her slow down and like maybe avoid making some of the wild, wild decisions that would really bring her life somewhere off track. But she really is able to spend a lot of time thinking, which is not something we always see in fantasy books. I feel like there's a lot of do first and worry about the consequences later. But I think because she is older and because she has so much in her life, she's really more like, oh, I can't do that anymore.
And it was also the interesting part, you know, when I was putting together this novel and wondering at what point of her life did I want to focus on. And I thought, okay, I want to write a pirate, but I don't want to write a bad person in a way. Like, I wanted this character to feel like someone you could root for. How do you play with that? How do you, you know, really wrestle with the idea of what somebody would have done as a pirate? There's no getting away from that, and how they may feel about it now. And it felt like, again, her faith was a part of making that a more natural journey.
Did anything really surprise you that you learned while you were writing this book, or like a great fact that you maybe couldn't quite fit in? Any of those like exciting moments from behind the scenes of writing, or something that maybe you've found while researching for the coming books?
I'm trying to think of some, because this is one question another I should prepare for, because there are so many. I think I just like to tell people the cons in this book are based in historical cons. Like, I think I did not realize the cups game, which I'm sure if you live in a city, anywhere on this planet you have seen done before of, you know, the moving of the things around. I did not realize that they were doing that in the medieval world. And that even then, they had a way to tell you how to cheat at it. I saw that and I'm just like, oh my God, like, that's amazing.
I feel like as long as there have been games, there has been one shady person sitting in a corner saying, and this is how you cheat.
Yes. And actually, you know what? Now I can remember a few more because that's also, it's from the same book of, you know, 13th century charlatan's tales, which is great because the guy writing it, he's writing it for his, you know, like his ruler, and you cannot tell he's reporting it like, oh, I'm an academic. I gathered all these views, and you can't tell how much he believes in all this. And if he was probably a charlatan. Because there's a degree of pride and everything which he tells these tales of, you just want to be like, I think you tried that. I think you maybe had an interesting past. But I mean, he tells stories about, you know, people would pass off a monkey as like, you know, had become Muslim and like take him on his little, they trained him to go into the mosque and essentially extort money from people who were like, oh, wow, that's amazing. There's tales in this about how to make fire traps for tombs. Like, basically, you would be like guiding people, like the mummy-esque, you know, you would guide them into a pyramid, and how to make fake maps, how to make, you know, snake statues that would spit at fire. So like all the ways to like cheat people who were like ready to go on this adventure, like to find the mummy and the virtues and all this stuff. So I thought that was fascinating that they had that elements of that in what we now think is like, you know, funny adventure movies from the 90s. I'm like, no, they had that medieval version as well.
I love that we are never as far apart from our past as we think, that like, as long as there were things, there were people trying to get around those things. Yep, and I think that's very much human nature. I can't. I mean, and you mentioned maps, and there's some great maps in here. But one of the last things I want to talk about is how gorgeous this cover is and how perfect. Like, seeing this on a shelf or anywhere, immediately I was like, I have to know more about that. It's so amazing.
Thank you. I lucked out so much with both my international and my US cover. I mean, they just got the vibe immediately. And I was worried that was something we weren't going to really be able to convey, because I wanted like, oh, this is an adventure tale. And instead, in this culture and time, and it just nailed it.
It's so good. I can't wait for a new crop of readers to get their hands on Amina's story and to go along on this adventure. I wonder, to end things off and to sort of put Amina on the shelf where she belongs, who is your ideal reader for this book? Is there someone where you're like, if you haven't already picked this up, this is the kind of person,
oh my gosh,
who I hope gets it?
I mean, the Amina answer would be Book Talk.
Yeah, absolutely.
For the name. No, honestly, and this always hits with the David Bond trilogy. It was always like doctors in training doing their residency and finding another healer. I liked this one. I wrote this for parents first and foremost. And if like when I hear people be like, this audiobook got me through 3 a.m. feedings, God bless. Like, it will get easier. You will go on your adventures. So I really hope that's who this book finds.
That's amazing. And I can't wait for people to walk into stores and see this amazing cover and be like, that's the book for me. Shannon, thank you so much for being here. And forever, all of our listeners, The Adventures of Amina Al-Sarafi is out in paperback now. So please go pick it up.
Thank you for listening. Poured Over is a Barnes & Noble production. To help other readers find us, please rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts.